Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. From the Arts Desk, some of the events coming up. On January 8th, it's Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat at the Honeywell Center in Wabash. January 9th, second Saturday, Arts Place at the Blackford County Arts Center in Hartford City. Also January 9th, Young Artist Competition 2016 at the Muncie Symphony Orchestra. January 16th, it's the Muncie Citywide Comedy Jam at Cornerstone Center for the Arts. January 17th, Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Concert at the Muncie Symphony Orchestra. January 29th, Mark Lowry and the Martins with Stan Whitmire at the Honeywell Center in Wabash. And January 29th through February 6th, The Brave Little Kid with Muncie Civic Theater. It's hard to believe that another year is over. At Indiana Weekend, that means 52 shows with interesting people and places from around Indiana. Looking back, there were some people who really stuck with us. We went to the Muncie Symphony Orchestra's Young Artists Competition at Sursa Performance Hall at Ball State University. The competition showcases rising young talents. It serves as encouragement and inspiration for other children who are learning instruments. That is Kaylee Ellis of Greenfield.
What was your planning going into this?
It went pretty well. I'm satisfied with what I did. I practice about an hour and a half a day, and every now and then my dad will let me do half of that because we're busy. And so I have other pieces, but during the fall and winter, the concerto is mainly my focus. So I practice a good amount of time on that, you know, learn the notes, run the scales, get the musical stuff done, and then just go out there and do my best.
What does this kind of amount of practice and work and everything, the dedication that you put into this, do you think that when people do that, does it help you in other ways?
I think so. When you can practice being so dedicated to something in one place, it can help you in other areas of life as well. So help you be dedicated to your schoolwork after learning to stick through your practice with piano.
Student musicians like you, how are you different from other kids in school?
Well, a lot of the kids at school know that I play piano, and they're all like, oh, you do such an amazing job. And really, I think me and my parents think God has really given me a gift, and just practicing helps me to, you know, develop that gift. And if I go out and play my best, I'm always satisfied with how I do.
How much of this is something that you're born with, and how much is it practiced? Do people realize how hard you work at this?
Some people are really surprised when I tell them I work an hour and a half a day. I personally don't like it, but I have to push through it. I think part of it is definitely practice. You have to cultivate the gift, but I think a big part of it too is that I've really been blessed and that I just need the practice to develop the gift and get better.
How important is focus and calming your nerves and being prepared for a competition like this mentally?
It's really important. I get really nervous before competitions. So, you know, I'll go in the warm-up room and run through my scales. I might read or think about something I like to help distract me. I'll pray or recite Bible verses I know, that kind of thing, to help calm my nerves. And then I go out there, and my dad says somehow I have this way of channeling my nerves into an energy for the piece. And it actually goes really well usually. I don't know how I do it, but it happens.
You seem to have a lot of poise and maturity. Do people ever tell you that?
Yes, I get that a lot. And
yes, why is that?
I really don't know. I've been taking lessons for 6 years now, I think. So I think doing piano a lot has helped me. But, you know, I always just tell them thank you. And it really is special to me to know that people appreciate my poise.
Where do you want to take this? What do you want to do as you get older?
Honestly, I'm not sure yet. I've thought about maybe, you know, being a concert pianist. I've thought about, like, teaching or playing for churches or stuff like that. I really don't know yet. But I've got some years to decide because I'm only 12 right now. So I've got some time to decide what I'm going to do.
Are you able to have a normal life with all of this stuff that you do?
Yes, I am. I go to a homeschool co-op 2 days a week. And so I do my school there, and I'm homeschooled the rest of the time. I am an avid reader. I read all the time. Personally, my favorites are The Hunger Games and Divergent and this series called The Lunar Chronicles. They're all really good. And I'm big on movies, too. I have a lot of different hobbies that I do outside of piano. It's just a job of balancing them all.
What's your favorite subject in school?
Oh, drat. I like science a lot. I'm a big hands-on person, so doing all of the experiments and stuff is really fun for me. And my mom's a science teacher. And dissections are the best.
Really?
Yes.
What have you dissected?
I dissected, I think it was either a pig or a sheep heart and a cow eyeball. And it was really fun.
Kaylee Ellis of Greenwood, an eighth grader in the Muncie Symphony Orchestra's Young Artist Competition last year. We're catching up with some of our favorite Indiana weekend stories in this year-end show. Kaylee and the others in the competition we talked with were some of the most poised, interesting people we met, and they're 6th, 7th, and 8th graders.
Indiana Weekend, Real Radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Along the way in 2015, we met a downtown Muncie business owner who's working on at least her third or fourth career. Christy Blanche worked on Indy racing cars with some of the sport's top teams. Then she was a Ball State anthropology instructor working with prison inmates. Now she runs Aw Yeah Comics across the street from the Delaware County building. Now, it could be that you have no interest in comics, but listening to Christy may just change your mind.
Is it unusual for a woman to own a comic store?
And we have half of our customers are female. We have a lot of females with pull lists. I know a lot of female writers. We have Alex DeCampi, who is a female writer. She's coming here for Free Comic Book Day. She's writing Archie versus Predator. We just had Jackie Crofts here, who is the artist.
Not Archie. No, not yes. Archie and the gang. Veronica.
Archie and the gang versus Predator. It's amazing. It's amazing. It was a book I didn't know I needed until they announced it. And then I was like, I need this. So,
have comics become more female friendly?
Absolutely. They're much more diverse. There are a lot of female leads. There's a lot more female writers and artists. It's still not where it needs to be, but it's getting better all the time. And I came from the world of racing, of IndyCar racing. So sometimes I think, wow, it's changing pretty quickly. I think it's a lot slower in that sport anyway, but it's really starting to change quickly. And we still, you know, sometimes we take a step forward and two steps back, but we're managing to make some progress. And we have great writers out there like Anna Senti, who's been writing for a long time, and Louise Simonson. And then you've got Gail Simone and Kelly Sue DeConnick. And there's so many women, Marguerite Bennett, Kate Leth. There's so many people out there. And they're superhero comics, of course, and Marvel and DC are full of superhero comics, but they're also putting things out that aren't. A lot of people don't know that the movie The Kingsman, that was based on a comic. And you've got things like Road to Perdition and History of Violence. Those were both comics. Ghost World, that was a comic. So comics have been, for a while, not just about superheroes, but now they're really getting, mostly thanks to Image, they're getting into the mainstream. And you have a lot of comics out there on every topic. You have, historical comics. Laura Innes has been doing The Dreamer for, I think there's three trades out now. It's an online comic that goes into print. It's amazing. And if you're a history buff, you need that. The Rebels, you've got Kill Shakespeare. There's so many different comics for any topic. And so if people come in and they say they don't read comics, I would say, what kind of books do you read? What TV shows? What movies do you watch? I will find a comic for you. And I usually find them a comic, and I'll say, if we have a dollar comic, which are a lot of companies will put out the first issue and they charge a dollar. a lot of times I'll just give those to people. Read it, and if you like it, come back and get the trade. And
get the trade.
A trade is a collected, but you have single issues that come out monthly. And then once you get anywhere from 4 to 6 of those out, then they put out a larger book that they call a trade. And they collect all of those issues together.
I have to ask, you were in the racing business before. What?
Yeah.
what was that like? What were you doing?
I started as a photographer. And I worked as the Ron McQueenie's assistant at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I traveled to the races, took pictures. Then I had my kid, Rob. And so I stopped that. Then after he was old enough, I started working for Treadway Racing and then started my own business called The Gear Shed. I rebuilt and serviced gearboxes for the IndyCar races. We had clients like Scott Goodyear and John Paul Jr. So we would just contract with people, and with teams, and then we would go to the races and we would change their gears between races, and then after we would rebuild their gearboxes.
So you're in this glamour world of racing in Indianapolis, and now you're a comic book store in Muncie. Yeah, glamour.
Glamour is, sweating and have gearbox oil all over me. Yeah, it was so glamorous.
Are you a wrench?
Yeah. I actually, when Greg Ray, who with the Tom Knapp Racing, he said that the most fun he would have at the racetrack was when he would sit in the garage and watch when I was changing gears between races. And I wore this pink shirt, and I always had my hair back in a ponytail, and people would walk by and go, "Oh my gosh, it's a girl!" And they would just stare. So it was like really strange. And I mean, even when at one point with Panther Racing, we had 2 races back to back, and so they had stopped by Dale Earnhardt's shop to work on the car for a day and a half. So they asked if I could come by there and change the gears. So I said, of course. So I went there, and it's a beautiful facility, amazing. And so their gearbox guy came by and starts asking me all these questions. "Well, what's that? What are you doing there?" And I was like, "Look, if you don't know how to work in a gearbox, I can teach you, but I really need to get my work done." He was just testing me, and I was like, "You wouldn't do this if I were a male." And so then after he figured out I knew what I was doing and I stood up to him, he was like, come look at my gearbox shop. It's awesome," which it was. I was extremely jealous. They had a lot more money than we had. And then pretty soon here comes Dale Earnhardt, and met the crew and everything. And then later on, we were taking a tour of the complex, and he came. Here comes Dale. I'm walking up. He walked up to me. He goes, you're the gearbox lady. And I went, "Yeah, yes." And I was a little, shocked because it's Dale Earnhardt. And he said, "You like change the gears?" "Yes." "You get your fingers like dirty in there?" "Yes." "Yes." I was like, "Well, not just me. My Chaz does too, who's the guy I employed." And he was like, "But you do it." And I was like, "Yeah, how hard is that for you to understand?" And he was like, "That's awesome. You need to come work for me." And I was like, "Man, you guys work way too hard. You have like 42 races in the season. No way. We had like 16. I said, "I have a kid. I got to be home." And he was like, "You change your mind, you call me." And I was like, "Okay." So that was pretty cool.
That's Christy Blanche, co-owner of Ah Yeah Comics in Muncie. We contacted her to find a local angle when the big Comic-Con convention was going on in Indianapolis. She has such an amazing personal story, though, from IndyCar racing to teaching in prison, now actually writing comics herself.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
And finally, in our last look back at Indiana Weekend from 2015, the topic of film noir, the movie style developed in the 1940s and 50s, featuring tales of hard-bitten characters, a visual look often dominated by moody, dark shadows. Does this sound familiar? Soundtrack from The Maltese Falcon, 1941, starring Humphrey Bogart as Sam Spade. Here, Bogey parlays with the menacing Sidney Greenstreet.
"Mr. Spade, have you any conception of how much money can be got for that blackbird?"
"No."
"Well, sir, if I told you, half, you'd call me a liar."
"No, not even if I thought so. But you tell me what it is, and I'll figure out the profit."
This is fascinating stuff for movie buffs. A Ball State University online course on this subject. More than 16,000 people signed up. This was a partnership with Turner Classic Movies. The online multimedia course was called TCM Presents Into the Darkness, Investigating Film Noir. The class was developed by Richard Edwards, executive director of Ball State's iLearn Research, and a very fun person with whom to talk about movies.
Film noir is something that's very difficult to define. For the last 70 years, scholars and fans have been trying to come up with a definition of what film noir is, and we're probably no closer today than we were 70 years ago. Overall, what I tend to think of when someone asks me, define film noir, is that there were a certain number of films that started to be made in the early 1940s that felt very different from other detective and crime thrillers that had been made in the 1930s. These films seemed to have a grittier substance. They seemed to have a more excessive style. They seemed to be telling this crime story in new and different ways. And what happens is, there are all these films being made during World War II, mostly around the crime thriller, films like The Maltese Falcon, Laura, Double Indemnity, and critics in the U.S. are starting to pick up on that something is happening in Hollywood. But it's not until 1946 in France that a couple film critics, Nino Franck and Jean-Paul Cartier, are actually seeing these films all at once. During World War II, Hollywood films were embargoed in France. And so critics like Franck and Chartier were able to see hundreds of films in a very compressed time period, and they were able to start to see how these films like The Maltese Falcon and Double Indemnity were different. At the same time, it was very popular in France that they were translating the hard-boiled novels of Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett, and they were calling these books, when they were translated into French, Série Noire, the noir series of hard-boiled literature. And when Nino Franck was looking for a term to talk about these new dark and bleak crime thrillers, he coined the term film noir. So a very American film style has a very French name.
What's a starting point for someone interested in experiencing this?
Well, the starting point for me is really to watch these films from the early 1940s. It's impossible to ever say what the very first film noir is, but one that is frequently looked at as an early high point that started to signal something was changing in Hollywood is John Huston's 1941 film, The Maltese Falcon, starring Humphrey Bogart in his iconic role as Dashiell Hammett's great private eye, Sam Spade. So if you're going to really start somewhere, I usually recommend people start with The Maltese Falcon. It has really those core elements that we begin to associate with film noir. It's the hard-boiled detective going as a kind of tarnished knight, going into a more corrupt world, neither wholly bad nor wholly good, at the heart of this mystery that is being propelled by fate. And at the heart of The Maltese Falcon, we have one of our great adventures of all time, as characters like Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre, along with Humphrey Bogart and Mary Astor, are all chasing, you know, the iconic Maltese Falcon, which is this literal object that the stuff that dreams are made of. So I really like people to start there. If you really want to see like where the noir style really starts to come together in ways that starts to influence dozens of films, I always recommend people look at Billy Wilder's 1944 film, Double Indemnity, starring the great Fred McMurray and the brilliant Barbara Stanwyck. This is a film that has it all. It's written by Billy Wilder and Raymond Chandler. It is really one of these stories that has a genuine femme fatale, this dangerous woman that's going to upset the balance of power in the film.
Can we tell people that he works for an insurance company?
So, I mean, what's so great about it is it's based on a story by James M. Cain, and it deals with this issue of an insurance agent who goes on a sales call one day to sell insurance to a woman's husband, and they quickly fall into a love affair that results in the idea to plot a man's murder. And the entire story is told in flashback. And that's one of the hallmarks of film noir. Like, if you haven't seen a lot of film noir, these are stories that frequently start at the end. They start with the character having literally lost everything, and then the story is the retelling of how they got to that point. And Double Indemnity is just so great at that, because you have Fred McMurray, literally telling his dark tale into a dictaphone, and we in the audience are along for the ride, and what a tremendous ride it is.
Richard Edwards, executive director of Ball State's iLearn Research, who taught an online multimedia class last year on film noir. More than 16,000 people signed up to study movies such as The Maltese Falcon, Double Indemnity, Touch of Evil, even more recently, Blade Runner. And that's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time, and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. By the way, I know this is the time of year when you see so many appeals for your support for good causes. Could we ask you to consider just one more? We'd be very grateful if you could take just a minute to support Indiana Public Radio. Your gift allows us to present the music, NPR, and local news that you depend on, as well as shows like Indiana Weekend, The Arts Desk, and The Scene. Your gift is an investment in good quality shows, and you can take care of that easily with a visit to indianapublicradio.org or by calling 1-800-646-1812. Just a reminder also that it's a huge help if you can support IPR as a sustaining member. Your recurring donation is deducted each month from your credit or debit card and helps a great deal in continuing the tradition of public radio here in East Central Indiana. We're grateful to our many friends and IPR members. When you reach out with your support, it's a vote for quality and a strong statement that you value NPR and your local shows like Morning Music Hall with Stephen Turpin and local news in the morning with Stan Sollers and in the afternoons with Stephanie Weekman. If you've already given, thank you. And thanks for thinking about adding just a little bit more. If you're not a member, well, what better way to start off the new year? Please join us now by going to indianapublicradio.org or by calling 1-800-646-1812. Thanks for your help, and thanks for supporting Indiana Weekend.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you will join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.